make it three in a row as he defends that world title. Green flag on, lights are on. Jorge Lorenzo makes a good start this time round.
And welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 403 for Wednesday, the 30th of April, 2014. My name's Martin Darlington. I am in the northeast corner of Wales, very close to the English border. And with me, all the way from his homeland, down under, across the other side of the world, but now living in Canterbury, in the southeast corner of England, nowhere near Wales, it's Harry Lloyd.
How's it going? I've never actually been anywhere close to Wales. Fun fact. No, never been.
Cracking biking country. Approach with caution, but no, it's very good. Loads of bike clubs come up this way.
I've heard there's a lot of hills. That's what I was told.
Lots of hills and close harmony singing.
Sounds like it could be an interesting holiday then.
Right, we've actually got quite a lot to talk about, and Harry's got a load of exams going on. So we were meant to be me and Jim tonight, but Jim's had to go and dog sit.
I think that's code for something.
Yeah, I don't know. I was trying to think. There's a double entendre in there somewhere. So we don't have the list of subscribers and donators for this week because that is Jim's remit very much. We don't think we've got any errata. And listener feedback, we need to go into this in more depth when we've got more time, but I do have to give a heads or a shout out to Binky Winky.
Yeah.
Whoever Binky Winky is, sent a brilliant, the 10 top 10 disappointments of the MotoGP season so far. It was very funny, but it was also actually quite well appointed, and it generated a long discussion between Jules, myself, Harry, Dave. It was great, and it just sort of kept going backwards and forwards. So that was pretty good. But Binky Winky, don't worry. Mr. Winky, we will get back to it when we've got a bit more time. We've got a bunch of races and some news to get through.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Do you want to kick off the news?
Well, again, this is probably not the right week or episode to do it in, maybe when we don't have a race, but silly season starts earlier every year. We've actually done quite well to get almost to May. But there's only, of the top teams, the factory team certainly, there's only Cal Crutchlow who's got a contract for next year. Dovi is in his second year of a two-year. So are Lorenzo and Rossi. So are Marquez and Pedrosa, of course. So there's an awful lot of speculation about to kick off. Rossi's competitive, but he's not really at the pointy end. Is he going to take the opportunity to go to World Superbike? Dorna own rights to both, so I'm sure they'd give him a large financial incentive to go because it needs a boost. Let's face it. Viewing figures and attendance figures at circuits are still in decline at World Superbikes.
Yeah, certainly attendance figures, and especially with the Italian audience. Mm. Like the Assen race had an okay attendance, but anytime you go to any of the Italian races, it's pretty dead.
I mean, when they come to Silverstone or Donington here, you're getting bigger attendances for the BSB races there than you are for World Superbike, which is shocking, but particularly with so many Brits and the reigning British world champion in Tom Sykes and the World Supersport, obviously Sam Lowes has gone to Moto2.
So the other big thing for next year is Suzuki. Obviously, Suzuki are planning on coming back, and in theory, they have two relatively competitive factory open, factory 2.0, whatever it's going to be called, bikes, where they're obviously going to be using the same rules that Ducati are using now, with more engines, slightly different tyres, with a concession of having slightly different software. So there's kind of been a couple of names thrown out around that ride. Obviously, Randy Depugnier is one of the leading names because he's been doing a lot of the development work on that, and you'd think that he'd kind of take that contract with the clause that if I do all this work, then I'll at least get a year on the bike or something.
Yeah.
But Brivio's also been saying that we're going to have a talk to everyone, you know, just try it out. But certainly Danny Pedrosa's looking like he could be of some interest to Suzuki. And obviously with Marquez now becoming so dominant and Pedrosa now having a million years in the factory Repsol team, maybe they do need to start looking. I mean, Pedrosa's still almost a guaranteed podium spot, so he's still a very good rider, but maybe you want another young talent like Vinales or someone alongside Marquez, you know?
I mean, the obvious one, I think, is Lorenzo. Whereas a year or two ago, HRC were desperate to get Lorenzo, and I think Lorenzo would now possibly, I might be underestimating his loyalty to Yamaha, but he might be desperate to get there because, I don't know, there's two ways of looking at this. If he's on the same kit and Marquez beats him, he's got nowhere to hide. But I suspect his ego will persuade him that the only reason Marquez is so much quicker is down to the bike. And we know that, you know, there is an argument that the bike is certainly, the Honda's certainly more sorted than the M1 at the moment.
Yeah, definitely.
So that would be a possibility. Eugene Laverty's also been testing the Suzuki MotoGP bike. If Eugene's going to do that, he needs to do it sooner rather than later because all those World Superbike Brit guys are moving into their late 20s and there's too much talent coming through in its teens, I think, for the factories to really look at them for more than a stopgap if they don't come across soon and do really, really well. Possibly, there's a rumour him and Sam Laws have got clauses in their contracts to move to demoted GP with Suzuki at some point. That's Alex Lowe's, of course. Don't know. Time will tell. If Lorenzo were to go to HRC, of course, there's a Yamaha factory ride open. A lot of hearts will say Bradley Smith, but Pol is on a Yamaha contract, whereas Bradley's on a Tech Trois contract. Pol Espargaro is the favoured son. Alex now has a strong association riding the NGM Yamaha, and he's doing better than Baby Bro on what's supposed to be inferior equipment. And, of course, the other one is Tito Rabat, who's probably ready for a move up if he continues as dominant in Moto2 as he's been so far, early days.
Yeah.
Ducati, I suspect they'll keep Dovi. I mean, that's the other thing for Suzuki is, would Cal consider jumping across? I think it's too early to tell because he's not really had the best of luck and he hasn't really seen how far it will go.
Yeah, definitely not.
I do have to say, we've got a lot of this from Bike Sport News. Now, they made a point about the Suzuki. At the moment, Randy is lapping when he's been testing at about the same pace as Nicky Hayden on the RCV1000, the production Honda racer.
The bike's also apparently quite fuel hungry, is what I was reading today.
Right. So first season, when they're allowed a bit more, may not be a huge drama. Yeah.
Yeah, it will be really interesting. And there was also an article today that apparently Mark VDS are talking about leasing an M1 engine so that they can do an open bike. Because there was obviously originally that rumor when the whole open class came about that Mark VDS and Pons HP40 would move up with Kalex chassis and Yamaha engines. So that rumor is getting a bit more life again. And that would kind of accommodate Tito Rabat to move up. And then you'd think that they'd take Mika Kallio up just because he does have those years of MotoGP experience.
Yeah. Yeah, Randy DiPugno would be wincing. He's got a habit of running him over, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, certainly, Mark VDS seemed to be a very, very well put together team. You know, they put Livio Loy, and oh my goodness, we'll come on to him later. It's just spooky. If my 13-year-old daughter brought him home, I'd think, why are you hanging around with a kid 2 years younger than you? I mean, I can't believe he's 17, but what a fantastic ride. Anyway, we'll get to that. You know, they put the Moto3 team together when Mark Vander and I do apologise, but I've forgotten his surname. The team owner realised there were no Belgians in Moto3, not a single Belgian rider. But I don't think there's a single Belgian rider elsewhere in the paddock. So he put together the Moto3 team. So it kind of would make sense if they've got the financial backing, or he's got the finances personally and he's willing to invest it. Because don't forget, they run an endurance car team as well.
Yeah.
Or a GT team. So, yeah, that would be something, definitely. I think it's one of those things that the story will develop as the season goes on, but I think there's going to be one big move will happen and then all the rest will fall into place.
Yeah,
similar to last 2 years ago when we were waiting for whether Lorenzo was going to re-sign or not. As soon as he did, boom, everything else sort of fell into place then.
Yeah, that is how it always seems to be. And just going back to Ducati, Andrea Iannone was top Ducati last time out in Argentina, so, you know, he could be, and he's Italian, so he could definitely be one that they might consider for the factory team if a seat is available. And there's always been this kind of a persistent murmuring that because of the Audi connection to Ducati, that Stefan Bradl's always kind of been one of the riders that Ducati's considered for a factory ride.
Yeah, I really, really like Stefan Bradl. I love his attitude. Interviewed him a couple of years ago at Silverstone and was really impressed with a quiet, humorous determination from him. He just seems to have hit a bit of a glass ceiling at the moment. Having said that, he did really well this weekend, which we'll come on to. We got Jerez this weekend coming up, and Maria Herrera will be wildcard entering in Moto3, riding for Estrella Galicia team, which will be interesting because this girl is quick. She's riding in the Spanish CEV. And
I think she's co-leading the championship with her teammate, yeah. I think.
Yeah. I mean, Ana Carrasco's doing really well, but she is to Moto3, you know, what Jenny Tinworth is to BSB. They're underfunded. She's not on equal equipment. So, and of course, because she's the only female in the Moto3, everyone's looking at her, and she's coming in her 20s. Yeah, it's hard to tell, hard to judge, really. But Maria Herrera coming in, riding for a good team, so it'll be interesting to see how she does.
Yeah, and she's obviously been riding that Honda bike in the SEV Championship, so it's not like she's getting on a brand new bike or anything as well. So that obviously helps a fair bit.
We've got Simone Corsi will be testing an open Yamaha at Jerez. For which team?
I'm guessing it's NGM Forward, the team he's currently with. I mean, it's pretty clear that they obviously need a rider to replace Colin Edwards when he retires at the end of this year. And Simone Corsi's kind of been one of those riders that's always been third or fourth in championships and in races, and is kind of one of those like second tier riders that, you know, if you can't get a Maverick Vinales on your team, then yeah, you know, Simone Corsi will put in some good results. He's Italian for an Italian team. Bring in a couple of sponsors.
And of course, he's got a habit of duffing people up.
Yeah,
so it might be a case of just aim him at Marquez or whoever you want to take out. And
yeah, he has,
like the blue touch paper and stand well back.
Yeah, exactly. He has some excellent races that make for... He has some very interesting ideas on how to pass people. That's
Yeah. Well, do you remember when... was it Marquez in his last year in Moto2, his championship year, when he whacked him off in one of the practices and everyone was howling, going, oh, it's Marquez again. And of course, he was like... What's the problem?
Yeah.
Didn't really hurt me.
Yeah, Valencia, and then he had to start, the back of the grid.
Yeah. And welcome return to Rattapark Willerott. He's going to replace Josh Herrin at Jerez. Josh still recovering from a broken collarbone he sustained in a motocross. I think he was doing some motocross for fun in between races, as it does to so many of the riders. He got injured. So he's going to be out again. So it'd be nice if Rattapark Willerott back. He'll be a compatriot to Titipong Warakorn. It's just an excuse to say that name. And Ricky Cardoos to replace Alex for the rest of the season on the Tech Toit Moto2 bike. Not a huge surprise that he's going to come in and remain. Okay, he's been there a couple of times, but he's doing okay on what is still not a particularly... competitive bike.
I'm not sure that bike has had any development since Bradley Smith has left it. I mean, usually you can notice small changes in aero on the bikes, at least with like the fairings and stuff, but that Mistral looks exactly the same as it did the day Bradley Smith got off it.
I mean, it's amazing that someone of Guy Coulon's Guy Coulon is Brad Smith's crew chief, and for anyone who isn't aware, he's the one who looks like the Mad Professor. He looks like the guy out of Back to the Future, but he is a genius. I mean, lots of people talk about his talent, his ability. He once built something like a 16-cylinder motorcycle just because he could.
The video of him revving it on YouTube, and it sounds ridiculous.
Bonkers, yeah. So you know, touch of genius, but he hasn't been able to, well, the team between them have not been able to sort out that Moto2 chassis to just do what it should do, you know. And when you're all running a control engine, there's only the chassis to blame, really.
Yeah.
Not yet confirmed, talking of Jerez, if Cal Crutchlow's going to run. Pirro down as a wild card anyway. Finally, it's quite surprising. Makes me think the injury is a lot worse than we first thought. I mean, it sounded like a broken finger, but of course... Is it a finger? Is it a thumb? If it's a forefinger or middle finger on the right hand, that's one of his breaking fingers.
No, apparently it's just a broken pinky. But the issue is that he apparently can't close his hand, so he can't break, basically, which does make it seem like perhaps it's maybe more than just a broken pinky. Maybe there's something going on with the knuckles. Obviously, it's really hard to tell what it actually is without being Cal's doctor or Cal himself. But
you remember when he bust himself up at Silverstone 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and he had to run across on a broken heel?
Yeah, right on his broken ankle.
He had to do stand on his heels and lift his toes, then stand on his toes and lift his heels. And if it's just a pinky, the Cal Crutch that we've got to know and love, I'd have thought would have got a small hatchet, whacked it off and said, ah.
Done a Troy Bayliss.
Yeah, I didn't really need that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just found that strange.
Yeah, it will be interesting. Maybe since the bike isn't so competitive, you know, he's not worried about rushing back because he knows that he's not going to miss out on a chance to get on the podium or something. That could also play into it.
Strange one. Quick one about penalty points. I think we'll leave the one that came from the race till we talk about the race. But Johann Zarco in FP3 battered into Ramos and he got two penalty points. Now, Jim said he either has four in total or three, but he certainly had more penalty points coming into the Argentinian race than he had championship points.
He still
points.
Does. He didn't. I don't think he's.
Yeah,
because he
didn't finish. No, he finished outside the points again. Really surprisingly disappointing season so far for Johann Zarco. The penalty point system has been slightly tweaked this year because last year they said they all get wiped clean at the end of the season. Then they realised, well, there is no
no reason to be careful at Valencia.
Exactly. The last race of the year, you can just go nuts and ram into everyone, slam into everyone. Obviously, there are, you know, you can be disqualified in the race as it's running or black flagged. But what they've said is, no, they're going to be on a 365-day rolling continuous year. So if you're naughty at the end of the season, that'll carry over to the next season. And how it works is once you get to 4 points, you start the next race in the back of the grid. 7 points, you start in the pit lane. And remember now, you've got 10 seconds after the last rider's passed you before you're released. And 10 points, you get disqualified from the next race. So Johann Zarco needs to watch out.
Yeah, definitely. 4 points in three races, that's pretty insane.
Hmm.
And Zarco's always been a bit of a hothead. I mean, you remember him racing against Tyrol in 125s, that last year 125s, and at bloody Misano when he was just an absolute idiot around that whole last lap and was waving and all sorts of dumb stuff.
He always struck me, though, that the crashes, when he's taking people out, it's been more through, I wouldn't say incompetence, but he doesn't strike me as a, right, I'm going to have you. He's not a Simone Corsi. Who's actually very good at it and he's quite subtle about it. It's just sort of like, sacrebleu, I've come into the corner too fast. And the next thing you know, he's taking someone out. It just seems, he seems to have a rush of blood to the head.
Yeah, well, that was kind of the issue with when he took out Julian Simon at Coda, is that it was like the second or third lap and he tried this insane overtaking move from like so far behind. Whereas if he had just trailed him for a lap or two, he would have just gotten naturally through anyway, through having quicker lap times.
Do you remember, was it Misano where he was neck and neck with Nico Tyrol in 125s?
Yeah, it was Misano.
And he led him into the last corner and then he sat up and looked over his shoulder, which just created enough drag that Tyrol managed to blast past him.
Yeah.
And he said afterwards, he said, well, I knew he was going to beat me because of the engine power. We only beat you by half a wheel if you kept your head down. And
worth giving it a shot, you know? Like, yeah. Sitting down in the racing crouch for an extra half a second isn't going to kill you.
It's almost like, I thought he might have beaten me, so I sat up to make sure.
Yeah.
Well, you definitely did that, son.
Yeah, you definitely see one or two riders do some funny things, especially in the lower lightweight class.
Yeah.
Speaking of, Andrea Locatelli is going to miss the Jerez race due to a fracture of the radial head. I got this from a GP1 article, which is obviously an Italian website. So the radial head is apparently a bone in the elbow, but I'm not 100% sure if that's an accurate translation, but there's something broken in his arm, basically. And this happened when him and Carol Haneke, different Czech Carol, crashed together in Argentina, which was just a racing incident and didn't look too serious. I think Locatelli got back on and did at least a couple of laps, so.
You could imagine, though, that the casual viewer saying, and here comes Carol Haneke thinking, oh, it's a chick racing, because he's got quite sort of long flowing locks that come out the bottom of his helmet, haven't he? And yeah. With the name Carol, he'd think, there's a bird.
Yeah, but he had decent results in Qatar and Coda, especially for a rookie. So it was a bit unfortunate that he crashed out twice in Argentina, as we'll get to.
Another change to the rules. Bridgestone have announced that with the sanctioning of the FIM and Dorna, they, for the remainder of the 2014 season, all the riders will have a choice of three front tyre compounds instead of two, with a total allocation increase from 10 to 9. And they're just trying to avoid a repeat of the Austin situation where we saw Rossi and Scott Redding notably pretty much destroy the front tyres and the bikes became almost unrideable. So that's good news. How the open class bikes maintain their advantage, I'm not quite sure. Whether they go from three to four, because you now got a hard, a medium, a soft, and a super soft.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either. But this does seem like a move where, obviously, as we discussed last show, Bridgestone's contract's up at the end of this year, so it seems like they're now very very happy to try and accommodate some of the changes that people want.
Yeah, but I think that's interesting, particularly as was mentioned during the BT Sport coverage with Julian Ride and Keith Ewan. They were saying that just after Bridgestone were awarded the contract, credit crunch hit, and Bridgestone bosses were saying quite openly, look, I'm not being funny, but we probably wouldn't have gone for this if the economic situation had been what it is now, you know, what it was when we signed the contract. But now it's looking like they're actually keen to keep it. They, you know, you'd almost expect to be going, nah, can't be bothered. No, you know, and putting sort of radial ply ties on or something just to try and make sure, no, we don't want this again. Because I think they're actually, they seem to be making a lot of effort to try and you know, keep the contract. I think a lot of us, Jules, I know I can speak for Jules Pop Monkey Gizek, who would love to see it back to, or sorry, originally Jules wanted to see it back to a tyre war. Although I think, like a lot of us, he's kind of got used to the idea, and actually it does create more of a level playing field.
Mm. Yeah, it's one of those tricky things where a lot of people complain that with it being a control tyre, that you're just building this motorcycle around this tyre, and that no, that's not the true spirit of prototype racing. But you know, with things like the Spec ECU coming in, it's kind of hard to see what prototype racing is anymore. And I know that's a big point of contention for a lot of people.
Yeah, and the tyres are such a huge part of the package. They're such an, you know, that is your contact patch. That's your connection to the thing that gives you traction and gives you grip and power and everything. So, yeah, they're incredibly vital. I mean, all the older riders say, you know, what's allowed them to constantly break records isn't so much the fact they're just going fast and fast, it's the fact they can, they're leaning at over 60 degrees angle of bank now.
Yes, I think 63, I think, was the most from the last two races. That's insane.
And we used to do a normal turn in a helicopter would be 30 degree angle of bank, a steep turn would be 45, and then you would be taken to 60 on your pilot's course so you could experience what it was like. And it feels as if you are at 90 degrees. It feels as if you are, you know, if you open the door, you'd fall out. It is really, really extreme. And those gyroscopic cameras they've now got.
Yeah.
Lorenzo had one, Marquez had one, Rossi had one. And every corner you think, that's a crash. Oh, no, he's up again. Oh, that's a crash. No, he's up again.
Yeah, to the casual viewer, it must just be insane that they're getting so far towards the edge of the tyre and just sticking there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And especially with so many of these, you know, elbow out, shoulder out, whole top half of the body hanging off the bike, like scraping shoulders, could happen.
Was it Paul we saw during one of the warm-ups, and he was having his elbow slider changed?
Yep. both Dainese and Alpenstar have had to develop special elbow sliders in the past like 2 years. That's insane.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It's just crazy. Before we move on to the races, and I do have to say, as Dave has announced recently, we are now working in conjunction with Bike Sport News. And this is going to sound a little bit like an advert, but I've got to be honest, this is something I've only just recently discovered, and it is fantastic. BikeSportNews.com have a racing calendar page. If you go to that, you can look at all the upcoming races in lots and lots of different series, or you can filter it by the series. You can do MotoGP, World Superbike, BSB, AMA, road racing, world endurance, and that's international road racing and Irish roads, world endurance, world sidecar, club racing, Or you can go, well, I live near Alton Park. I want to know what race is coming up Alton Park. So you can filter by the circuit, or you can filter by the month, or you can filter by who's promoting that race, or by keyword. It is absolutely excellent. It is so user-friendly. We use it for our upcoming races section we used to do at the end of the show. And I really do recommend it. So, because sometimes it's a nightmare. You're flicking from one website to another, trying to work out, you know, your calendar, your diary of when can I watch this, when can I watch that. Brilliant.
Mm, yeah, it is very good. I can't remember which issue it was, but I bought one issue of BSN, because they obviously do a print magazine as well, and it had basically a printout version of that, and that's definitely something that I'll, you know, it's above my computer, so anytime I'm working, I can look up and see what races are coming up. Because sometimes it can be, like this weekend, there was a lot of racing on, and, you know, aside from the big boys of MotoGP and World Superbike, like, it was hard to figure out when other races were on and stuff, so it is a good thing to have.
We had the Bol d'Or, we had the World Endurance. I mean, Dorna are now running World Superbike and MotoGP. Now, I know the time zones are different, so it kind of worked, but, you know, we've got families, we've got things to do. We can't always invest, you know, from 10 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, just sat in front of a telly watching bike racing. Well, I had work to go to, unfortunately, but, you know, it's like, Jesus, come on, let's sort out the calendar.
Yeah, it is one of those tricky things where it's trying to not make too many things conflict. Obviously, with Superbike now, they've made it so all the races are basically done by, like, 2 p.m. So I think that's them trying to, you know, space it out a bit. But hopefully in the coming years we can maybe space it out a bit more so there's one or two races.
Absolutely. So, MotoGP weekend, Argentina, first time I'd ever been there.
First practice delayed by half an hour.
Yes. Autodromo Termas de Rio Hondo, and not Honda, as lots of the journalists out there had the autocorrect on their laptops, and that were coming up with Honda. And even David Emmer, the perfectionist, the incredibly precise and always accurate David Emmer, still put Termas de Rio Hondo, which was great. And encompassing the weekend, and I know this is me being an idiot, but I just kept reminding me of Max Biaggi. And the particular one for Biaggi, I think, is when they first went to Portimao in that big wide open first corner. And every lap, he was just running wide. It just seemed that this circuit, flat as a pancake, but it was catching an awful lot of them out. We saw a lot of the classic match. Aha, I outbreak you, scummy bastard. Oh, shit. I outbreak myself, too. Hey, mamma mia, break the fucking track. You know, running wide, oh shit, come back in, eight positions back, work your way up to the front, do exactly the same again. And we saw it in all the classes.
Especially in the first laps.
Yeah, it made for really entertaining races. I mean, the grandstands were packed, but then there were only, I think, two of them. And it's obviously has a lot of development still to go.
There are apparently 50,000. I think the number I saw was there was something like 50,000 people there across the weekend. I'm not 100% sure.
Oh, I mean, considering that it's like Aragon Extreme, considering the nearest town is an hour's drive away, they were absolutely mad for it. So credit to the Argentinian crowd for going along. I promise I won't mention the Falklands. No, that's completely irrelevant, and that's a governmental thing anyway. It's just politicians being arseholes. You know, really vocal support. Again, at least 50% of the people there appeared to be Valentino Rossi fans, Kel Surprise. But we started with Moto3, and again, on pole position, we had Jack Miller. Efren Vasquez doing really well in qualifying, and Danny Kent on a front row.
I was quite surprised by Danny Kent being on that front row, because he's been struggling a fair bit. But I did find it interesting to learn that the IO team, both the KTM team and the Husqvarna team, have developed a sort of a new strategy for qualifying, where they'll send out Nicky Io, who we'll get to his weekend in a bit. They send out Nicky Io, Danny Kent, Carol Hanniker, and then Jack Miller behind them, so that the first three riders are able to sort of clear the way, so that Jack can get in a fast lap with some slipstream from them, and then they can then follow him to get their fast laps in as well.
It's Team Sky in Tour de France, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a cycle team doing the peloton, yeah. Well, we've said Moto3 and 125s4, it was the peloton series where you would get these. And that long back straight, they were saying...
Over a kilometre, and it's coming quite quick into it, so...
And particularly with the Moto3, if you can get a good slipstream, you are going to get an extraordinarily quicker time than if you don't. Jakub Kornfile headed up the second row with Romano Fanati and Francesca Bagnaia. Nicky Io was on the third row with Alex Rins and Livio Loi. Great qualifying from the little Belgian. Tanucci, Alex Marquez, surprisingly back in 11th.
Yeah, both him and Rins really struggled in qualifying and a lot of the practice. And Altzamora, Altzamora, the manager of their Estrella Galicia team, is apparently not too happy with Honda because he thought that they would be getting a full factory bike, but then it turns out that that Saxoprint RTG, who have Efren Vazquez and John McPhee, have the exact same level of support as Estrella Galicia, so it's more of a customer bike than a factory bike.
Yeah.
And that's apparently causing some tensions.
Yeah. My advice would be don't change horses midstream.
Yeah, definitely not, especially since he made that move to try and appease Honda, because obviously they were on KTMs last year, and Honda were not happy.
Marquez, well, we'll come to him in the race because that boy's got talent.
Yes, definitely. Definitely, definitely, definitely.
Shay Guevara, well, Juanfran Guevara, but you've got to call him Shay, haven't you, for Matt Frey-Aspar. He headed up row 4 with John McPhee and Miguel Oliveira. What's happened to Oliveira? He seems to be... The Mahindra seems to be capable at times, but Miguel's not doing as well as I'd expected him to do.
The Mahindra's having... Obviously, last year, Mahindra started with just the two factory bikes. Then mid-season, they expanded to two factory bikes and two other, air quotes, factory bikes with Ambrogio Racing. And then this year, they've doubled from 4 to 8. So that's a lot more bikes to produce, and all the Mahindra bikes are made at the Suter plant in Switzerland.
Right.
And apparently the issue is that all the bikes are having a lot of gearbox issues because they've had to ramp up development, so parts aren't perhaps as high quality and all that sort of thing. So apparently it's an issue of them ramping up so quickly and not having the infrastructure in place to make assurances about everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame.
Because, Miguel Oliveira, he had a clutch problem on the line, so couldn't race.
No, that's right, because he didn't even start.
Yeah, so that's just another one of those things. And then even in the race, the top Mahindra was in 13th position.
Oh, dear, yes, yes.
And, that bike got a podium last year and in Qatar was challenging for the podium. So, as you say, it's really weird. And especially when you compare Arthur Cease to Miguel Oliveira. I mean, Miguel's not doing great, but he's doing a lot better than Cease.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's another disappointment and a bit of a shame. So we got to the race. As Harry's mentioned, Miguel Oliveira didn't start. He was on the grid, but he didn't get going. And we had a couple of, Locatelli went out in the first lap.
Yeah, Locatelli and Hanneke both came together. Hanneke remounted and then crashed out.
Yeah, later on.
Yeah, 3 laps from the end or something.
But what we did have was a classic Moto3 axe murderers knife fight, whatever you want to call it, at the front. I mean, it was just it was brilliant, brilliantly entertaining. But we had Fanati, Miller, predictably, and initially we had Efren Vazquez, and that was the three at the front. In the first lap, let me just see where he was. In the first lap, we had down in 14th position was Alex Marquez. He made his way up by at least one position every lap, dropped back on lap 5, then continued to make his way forward. And eventually, he made his way up to the leading 3 on lap 14. And from then on, the Vazquez again, he fades, doesn't he? Which is a real shame. But we had Fanati, Marquez and Miller just beating the shit out of each other. I mean, you can look at the lap chart. All that records is who is in the lead when you cross the start-finish straight. In between that, there were... It was classic Moto 3. Slipstream, go past. Yeah. Yeah, and that turn 1 and turn 2, they were catching people out and people were running wide and just going into each other. But the other stealthy progress that was being made... was our little Belgian friend, Livio Loi.
Yeah, I was really impressed by him because, you know, sometimes you'll see newer riders, they'll get into a front group, but they've kind of gotten dragged along there just through being able to match the pace of everyone else for the first couple of laps. But nah, Livio Loi, he worked his way up there lap by lap, a lot like Alex Marquez, and legitimately caught them by the end.
He went back. He ended up back in 11th place on lap 5. Laps 4 and 5 was in 11th. In fact, sorry, he went back to 12th on lap 6, then started to work his way back up. But it was a really mature ride, wasn't it? I mean, he got on the back of the leading three of Miller, Marquez and Fanati. And you had Keith Hume. I don't know, he wants to adopt him or something, taking it in for his wife to mother. But Keith Hume was going, please, please don't fall off, Livio. Please don't fall off. But you could get on the podium here. And he had a few goes, but he was quite measured. And I thought it was a really mature ride by the little fella.
Yeah, I think he could have easily tried to make a crazy move and, you know, win it or bin it for the podium. That's by far his best position in Moto 3. So I think, definitely, as you said, he just decided, no, I'm going to get these good points. This has given me a lot of confidence. Next race, we can keep this up and work at it slowly.
And he has been. And let's not forget, at the beginning of last year, he couldn't compete in the first two races because he wasn't old enough. Yeah. He was 17 last week. He looks about 10, but bloody hell, there's an old head on those very, very young shoulders.
And he's riding a Kallax, which is by no way the best bike in Moto 3. It has a good engine, but from what I've heard, the chassis is nowhere near as good as the Honda or the KTM.
But he's got a very good team behind him.
Definitely.
And of course, his PR is being done by a friend of the show, Ian Wheeler. So, hey, Livio will be you know, on the front of GQ magazine soon. Interesting, talking about the lap charts. I mean, the lap charts, at the end of lap 20, we had Fanati from Marquez from Miller. And the implication from the lap chart is it was stable. No, it wasn't. We had shitloads of passes going on. And then we had an incident which actually led to Romano Fanati was issued with a penalty point. I'm kind of a bit... I don't know. I'm kind of a bit torn on this one. They were coming into the right-hander. It was the end of the straight, wasn't it? And they were all drafting each other. And Fanati, Marquez and Miller were running slightly wider. Fanati saw a chance, stuffed it up the inside. Marquez tried to close the door on him, or was just bringing in the tighter line to hit the apex. Fanati had no choice. He was basically either going to crash and take them all out, which would have been nice for Livio Loi because he'd have gone through to win. Or he'd have run into them and it'd have been carnage. But he had to close the corner, which meant he then was running too fast to maintain that. So he had to sit up. He biffed into Jack Miller, pushed him wide. Marquez went through. Next corner was the last corner, I think, or the penultimate corner anyway. So Fanati went through to win, followed by Marquez, followed by Jack Miller, with lots of shaking in the head. It's the heat of the moment. You accept that. Refuse to shake hands. Okay, it's the heat of the moment. You accept that. Despite the reputation Jack Miller's got as this kind of fun-loving, slightly anarchic punk rocker of a rider, you know, a throwback Julian Ryder described it as, in the best possible way. And then he did a... I thought, maybe I'm expecting too much, he's only a kid, a really disingenuous interview in the paddock where he looked like a kid who'd just been told Christmas was cancelled.
Yeah, I think the whole mentality of a win is everything and anything else is absolutely nothing has kind of like... Because he won the first two races of the season. They're the first two races he's ever won at this level.
Exactly. So that's my point. It's not like he was... the nearly kid last year winning race after race after race and got pipped by injury or bad luck. You know, he's just been winning races this season. He's on a great bike. We knew he was a great rider last year. He's really popular. Maybe popularity doesn't bother him, but if he wants to leave his mark, it should do. And, you know, I mean, he's 27 points in the lead. Sorry, 17 points in the lead from Romano Fanati, who is another great little character. You know, the pugilist is back. He disappeared off our radar last year. He was on a dog of a bike. He's in a good team. He's got, you know, Rossi and Vito Guerreschi behind him now, and Uccio and all the rest of that Italian clan. And he's doing really well. But I just thought, and then there was an appeal All three of them were up to race direction. Romano Fenati picks up a single penalty point. And Miller after that. And by now, you've had enough time to cool off. You went, well, what's the point in appealing? It's not like they're going to change anything. In kind of a bit of a petulant way. And I just thought, come on, dude. Hopefully, you know, good humour will be restored by this weekend at Jerez and Jack can put it right. Of course, he's going to fit. A bit like Lorenzo getting punted by Marquez at Jerez last year. I thought this was a lot less culpable than Marquez was last year. And strange, they didn't give him a penalty point then.
I think I rewatched the last corner incident when I found out that Fenati had gotten that penalty point. And I think it was is that after Fenati had pushed Marquez wide or after they had touched a little bit, whatever it was, is that he could have grabbed some brake to avoid hitting Miller, but he clearly chose not to grab any brake. He didn't accelerate, but he knew that, I think he knew that he and Miller were going to collide. So he said, ah, fuck it. You know, we'll have this bit of a bump. I think that's like,
well, I think it was Keith Hughley said, well, if he hadn't used Miller, he wouldn't have made the corner.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's possibly an element of that. It's a racing incident. He's got a penalty point. If he doesn't get another three, it makes no difference to his season. But at least I suppose they sort of said, yeah, there was an element of fault there.
Yeah, well, Rossi had a Valentino Rossi had a word with him in Parc Fermé, saying, you know, go over, apologise to Jack, like what you've done was maybe a bit harsh. So I think that everyone involved realised that the situation could have been handled a bit better.
Yeah, yeah. I just think the problem is if it had been. Who'd want to be rude about Max Biaggi whinging? You'd have thought, well, it's just Max being Max. Though people who love him aren't going to love him any less. People who don't love him, which is, you know, most of us, are not going to think any less than we did before. But I think because Jack Miller's come like this breath of fresh air and it's really refreshing. Like I say, this slightly anarchic, naughty kid. He hoons it up and down afterwards doing his wheelies and everything. And it's just, he looks so deflated. It's like, come on, dude, you came third. You're still leading the championship. You're in a great position. But Miller is still leading at 66 points. Romano Fenati on 49 with Efren Vasquez still on 42. Alex Marquez has pulled himself up to 40. Alex Rins on 35 onwards and downwards. Alex Masbou still doing well, 24 points. Cornfield Ken, Livio Loi up to ninth. I mean, he'll be getting a nosebleed, little fella.
Yeah, I think this season so far he's gotten more points than he got all of last season. So that's pretty impressive. But just going back to Danny Kent had a very interesting race.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Danny Kent reminds me a lot of Danny Pedrosa a couple of years, where if he's in front, he can lead a race no problem. Yeah. But as soon as someone starts battling with him, he just loses that rhythm and starts dropping back a bit. That's just how I see it. I could be completely wrong, but that's how I see it.
Yeah.
And that kind of happened here, you know. He was up in about fourth or fifth for a lot of the race, and he dropped back, and he was floating around sixth and then fifth, and then he eventually ended up finishing ninth. But kind of part of the reason, not part of the reason, but what didn't help was that at the last corner, Nicky Ayo, who's, you know, he's gotten into a couple of fights before in Moto3, he's been banned from races. He's Danny Kent's teammate. Nicky Ayo managed to knock Danny Kent off going out of the last corner. So Danny Kent crossed the line on his ass. It still counted as a finish because he's still holding onto the bike.
Yeah, he was still attached to it, just wasn't on it.
Yep. And then on the cooldown lap, what they didn't show on TV was that Nicky Ayo managed to slam into the back of Jack Miller because he wasn't looking where he was going.
Yes. Aki Ayo.
No pocket money.
No. Nicky's dad is such a great coach to great riders. I don't know. They've always said, haven't they, that they don't want to be in the same team. It's just too complicated with the relationships between, you know, team manager and rider and father-son. But, dude, have a word with your lad.
Yeah.
Do not become the next Axel Pons.
I have a very strong feeling that this could be Nicky Ayo's last season.
Oh, dear. Yeah. You can make some money ice riding in Finland or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like that or, you know, super bikes or something. It's just, he always seems to get involved in these incidents. Like in Indianapolis, what was it? I think it was 2 years ago. He was punching someone in the head because they both crashed together. And
yeah.
It's just, yeah, you know.
I think going back to Danny thing as well, I think a race is like a season. If you start badly and finish well, everyone remembers you, goes, didn't you do well? Don't do it the other way around. You know, you need to peak at the right time. I mean, let's face it, Alex De Angelis and Tony Elias got rehired year after year after year with San Marco, Grassini. You know, when they were, because they just knew when to suddenly start putting some points together, coming out to contract
time.
Yeah,
especially
shit
with
for the first six, seven, eight races. Absolutely, you wouldn't see them anywhere. Lucky if they finished. Then suddenly, boom! Oh, here comes that damn Tutti Frutti helmet, as yeah. Nicky Hayden once said. And they put it together. Oh yeah, okay. Now you really come to reach and great improvement, lads. Okay, we're signing for next season. Whew, last three races, nothing.
Yeah, I mean every time Moto2 goes to Phillip Island, Alex De Angelis somehow pulls out this podium from almost nowhere. So yeah, maybe it's just that the tracks at the end of the year suit him, and we're reading too much into it. But there's definitely some riders who ride a lot better under pressure.
Yeah,
than others.
So I think my man for the man of Moto3 for me, I think, was definitely Livio Loy.
Yeah, definitely. That was a very mature ride and an excellent first ride to be up there with the big boys.
To celebrate, I'm going to do that, which Livio, sorry, mate, but you can't do that for another year because you're too young.
Speaking of too young, I noticed the BT commentators were regaling the listeners with stories of Jack Miller celebrating in Austin, even though Jack is under 21.
Yes.
So I thought that was quite amusing.
Is it 21 in Texas? Some states are 21, some are 18, aren't they?
Is it? I don't have a clue, to be honest.
Mm.
I'm sure
you
one
can
of our
drink
listeners
at 18 in some states, but I presume it's drinking they were talking about.
Yes. Yes, that's what it sounded like to me.
Moving on to Moto2 and Tito. Looking neato, if that's not too awful a pun. Esteve Rabat. Pole position again. Wow, Mark VDS, they're putting it together, aren't they? Really good weekend. Well, it was for Tito. Mika Kallio qualified in 14th, and he'd looked so strong in the first couple of sessions. He seemed to take to that track, and then everyone else caught up, and he didn't seem to get any better.
Yeah, you saw that with other riders like Ant West as well.
Yeah.
He was up there in the first couple of sessions, but then everyone, the grip kind of came, and they didn't really improve their time. Well, they obviously improved their times, but they didn't really improve their position too much.
Mm. Yeah, we'll get to the bit later on, because I have an apology to make to you that, because you had Ant West in your fantasy road racing team, didn't you? But his bikes decided to start vomiting all over the track, spewing water everywhere. And you said, if his bike sprung a leak, I'd be in the lead in the mini host mini league. And I said, yeah, but if Alethis Bugger hadn't bunged it at the scenery, then I'd have been even further in lead. But of course, that was his doing, whereas the bike springing a leak was completely outside Ant's and West's control. So no, that was a fair point. But I've got him for Jerez and West, so I hope it doesn't do it again.
It tends to rain at Jerez a fair bit, so
Yeah, rain specialist. Interestingly, as we were talking about him earlier, Johann Zarco qualified second. And isn't that talking about don't start well and finish badly? That's going to end badly, I'm afraid. Xavier Simeon on the Federal or Grassini Moto 2 Suter was in third. So we had a Kalex, a Caterham Suter, and a Suter on the front row. Maverick Vinales, he is taking to this well, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely.
Really is taking to it well. I think a lot of people thought he's quite small and slight, but he's actually quite long and he's probably got quite good leverage. Jonas Folger, fifth, and Luis Salom, another one who's really coming along, qualified sixth. Mad Mattia Pessini, seventh. Alex De Angelis, hey, 2D 3D helmets, eighth. And Simone Exocet Missile Corsi, ninth. And they call him the Exocet because you can see him coming. There's fuck all you can do about it. And strangely, subdued so far this season, Takaaki Nakagami.
Just not had it, since they took away that air filter, not had his mojo.
No. What did he do with his air filter? I missed that one.
Well, in Qatar,
oh, yes, yeah,
he got disqualified because they had a different air filter.
Yeah, he can't still be sulking.
No, maybe it's, I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Jordi Torres qualified 11th. Marcel Schrotter on the Tech Tour. Mistral qualified 12th. Sandro Cortese. I'm hoping we're starting to see signs of getting to grips with the Moto2 bike from Sandro Cortese, because I hate to think that someone I really, really thought was full of talent is going to prove maybe not to be at this level. Mika Kallio, strangely 14th. Franco Morbidelli's 15th. So Dominic Agutu, I popped in the qualifying at 16th because I just thought it was worth mentioning.
Yeah, Agutu, again, he was like Kallio and West. He was up there, like, yeah. I think he was in FP2. But then after that, he had a clutch problem in one free practice session, and then he just couldn't get it sorted, it seemed like.
No, exactly. It was some strange fluctuations where people who did really well in FP, then really bad in QP, and then in the race did really well, or vice versa. And there didn't seem to be much sort of to it. Wow. The race.
It was a good one.
It was a good one, but as long as you ignored the front two riders.
Yeah.
Because we had...
Battle for third was excellent.
Yeah. We had Rabat led every single lap. Xavier Simeon was in second place at the end of every single lap. But then behind, it kind of got into a, you know, back to Jim's favourite axe murderer class. We had Salom. We had... what's his name?
Agutu.
Agutu and Maverick Vinales. I kept wanting to say Isaac Vinales. I'm thinking, no, he's the cousin. What's the Maverick Vinales? How can you forget a name like Maverick? Maverick Vinales dusting about up to the point that unfortunately Maverick bunged it.
That seemed like it was mostly Maverick on his own. I don't think there was any contact there. It was a turn one crash again, as you said. It was catching out a lot of people, went onto the dirty part of the track and just lost the front.
Yeah. We saw the aftermath. We saw him sliding and that was it. But Louis Salom worked his way through, really looked on it, really looked happy and comfortable. Simone Corsi was just so entertaining. He was kicking and punting people.
Yeah, his idea of a pass is get up the inside, then push them to the edge of the track, because if you're both wide, then the person who's wider can't overtake you.
When I was watching the Winter Olympics and they were doing with the snowboards and the skis, where six of them go off together.
Ski cross or snowboard cross.
Yeah, they had this thing, they call it, bump and jump or something, where you basically go up inside someone, you use them.
Yeah, if you're in the air, you're allowed to touch or something like that.
Yeah, so a jump and bump, that's it. So you take off, you use them to keep you online because you're going around a corner, and they have a choice of backing off and letting you go ahead, in which case you beat them, or basically leaving the track and you know, getting airborne and crashing into trees. And Corsi just does that. It's brilliant to watch. Good run by Sam Lowes and Mika Kallio.
Sam Lowes had a foot peg go through his calf in, I think it was FP3, I think, or FP2.
Yeah.
One of them. Again, but yeah, he crashed.
That's a tough kid.
Crashed foot peg through the calf and then was back out there qualifying. And a foot peg is a decent sized piece of metal to have go through your leg and leave a hole. Like, you can really get a finger in there.
Yeah, really not what you want to see happen. But yeah, because he'd crashed and he picked the bike up and came back.
Put his leg on a stool and was giving a debrief.
But he couldn't qualify particularly well, so he was 19th at the first lap. And he just made his way, again, under really good control. I think he made it into 8th place on lap 18, and he wasn't able, unfortunately, to catch the guys ahead. It was Mika Kallio ahead of him by a good few seconds, so he wasn't able to close that gap. But he held Sandro Cortese off, who was closing him from behind with Jordi Torres and Marcel Schrotter. I just think the Lowes twins both had a little bit of a reputation developed. They were a little bit kind of wild, and I think Alex at the end of the BSB season last year, Sam with his really, really impressive World Supersport title, and so far this season, they're just showing that, they're just really bloody good.
I think that Sam could do very, very well at Jerez. It's a track he knows. He's tested there with this bike, and he definitely has the confidence. So I think we could see a good result.
And I think the other name worth mentioning that's just so surprising is down in 19th place out of the points is Tom Luthy.
Yeah, he had a really bad weekend. He wasn't up there at all, really.
No, he never got there. He qualified. Good God, I don't think... Well, he wasn't in the top 15, 16.
No. He was down in 20th for most of it.
Yeah.
And that's the same with Nico de Rol. Nico de Rol eventually finished 14th, but Nico Tirol won in Austin last year.
Mm-hmm.
Last race, he didn't score any points in Austin. He just seems to have lost all his mojo.
Yeah, along with Takaki Nakagami. Sorry, yeah. Dave, but we couldn't bring you in just to say that. Dave's on night shift at the moment, bless him. So if you're listening, what am I saying? If you're listening, we're not live. But in 24th place was Titipong Warakorn, which I do always think is worth mentioning.
Yeah, I see you cut the results just there. And Sebastian Porto making a triumphant return from a semi-retirement. He finished in 23rd after qualifying like 33rd. So that was a decent ride.
He's what, mid-30s?
35, yeah.
35 years, yeah.
35 up against some of the craziest people in motor racing. Not too shabby.
Yeah. Now, the other one that surprised me as well, Louis Rossi. He's been a race winner in 125s. He's a good rider. He's down in 25th. Axel Pons, 26th. I just think he should be happy he's finished the race. Randy Krumenacker is another name.
Randy Krumenacker didn't have it last year, and he doesn't seem to have it back this year.
No.
And he's been up there before, but
now he's on that Yoda Racing Project Suter. That is a good team. They should know what they're doing. And Gino Rea, if the kid didn't have any luck, didn't have bad luck, he wouldn't have any luck at all. He finished down in 30th, really struggling that team to get anything coming together. And we lost some fairly high-profile riders. We lost Maverick Vinales, Ricky Cardoos, and Matty Pessini. All of him crashed out.
Yeah, and Pessini tried to get it. Pessini looked like a technical problem because he was trying to bump start it and the thing wouldn't go.
Yeah.
And I didn't see him actually crash. So I think Matteo Pessini's engine maybe gave up the ghost or there was some other problem.
In the standings, no great surprise. Tito Rabat, 70 points, 2 wins and a second. Mika Kallio is on 42. So, teammate. Quiet weekend this weekend for Mika, but obviously he's having a good season. But, 28 points behind already.
Yeah, no matter what, Rabat will lead after Jerez. That's
Maverick Vinales. I mean, that in his first season, after 3 races, he's in 3rd place, only 4 points behind Mika Kallio, who, let's not forget, he's been a MotoGP rider. He was a 250 champion.
It was his 200th GP start.
Sorry, 125 champion.
It was his 200th GP start last weekend, and it's Jorge Lorenzo's 200th GP start this weekend. Wow. So they've been racing for basically the same time, and you definitely wouldn't call Jorge Lorenzo a slouch.
No, not at all. Simone Corsi's 4th. I think he just threatened everyone, said, come behind me or I'll do you. Dominic Agata's 5th, Tom Lutie's 6th. I mean, Tom Lutie's 6th, that's almost surprised me. He just seems really quiet this season. Xavier Simon, 7th, Ant West, 8th. Louis Salom, 9th, and Sam Lowe's in a very credible 10th. I'm really impressed with that. So, we got to MotoGP. Interesting, again, through most of the early sessions, the fastest Yamaha, predictably, was Aleix Espargaró. Rossi Lorenzo took a while for the track to come to them, shall we say. But it was noticeable that the track got much quicker as the weekend went on. The temperature was rising, but also the dust and the crap was being cleared off it. But did you see the early sessions when they were riding around? They had rooster tails.
Yeah, it was like Qatar.
Yeah, just really didn't look somewhere you really want to push it out.
I would not wanted to have been one of those Moto3 riders out in the first FP1 session.
No.
Because they were literally just track cleaners.
Yeah, and we went to through the various stages with MotoGP of FP1, 2 and 3. Obviously, the times count. The top 10 go direct to Q2, and then we add Q1. Predictably, Bradley Smith, now they did say that Brad was working really hard on race setup. He wasn't that bothered if he didn't get into Q2. And I almost got a feeling that Julian Ryder was trying to tell us by inviting us to read between the lines that Brad was actually quite happy to go out in Q1 because he gets more laps. And I thought, well, I suppose, and he lived up to that confidence by relatively comfortably coming top of Q1. Nicky Hayden again was 2nd, just ahead. I mean, what, a 400th or a less than a 100th of a second. Yeah, sorry, 100th of a second clear of Scott Redding. Colin Edwards just behind them, Carol Abraham, Hiroshi Oyama, all the way back down to the rather bleak-looking Danilo Petrucci. So we had Brad and Nicky went through. Now, what I find interesting is Bradley can go from Q1 to Q2, and in this instance came seventh. He can certainly come further up. Whereas Nicky seems to get in and that's it. That is the limit of that bike. It won't go any quicker, that Drive M7 Aspire Honda. Mean,
yeah, but look at the top speeds. Nicky Hayden's top speed, 309 k's an hour. Mark Marquez's top speed, 327 k's an hour. That's an incredible difference, especially with a track that has over a 1k straight.
Yeah. And the second fastest time, Álvaro Bautista. And yet he qualified 10th.
Mm.
Not having a great season, young Álvaro.
No,
Bright Sport News were pointing out that Faustino Grassini has been pointing the finger a little bit. He started referring to him in interviews as Bautista, whereas Scott Redding is still Scott.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. And he's saying, yeah, it's very disappointing. We can't really understand why so far behind. Yes, he needs it. Bautista needs a much better result this weekend. Now, whether he's saying that, yeah, of course he wants to have a better result, or if he's saying, no, he needs to have a better result, or they might find their bikes get swapped, which was the slightly tongue-in-cheek, I think, suggestion. One thing I've got to mention, Dave is being cynical about all this and thinks it was an absolute setup. But during qualifying, Keith Ewan on BT Sport was talking with Julian Ryder. They were talking about tyres. And Keith said, just completely off the cuff, he just said, all right, Brad's got a hard on, which immediately, predictably, led to Twitter exploding in much hilarity. Dave is like, oh, that's an old joke. I've used that loads of times on social media. If that was a prepped and deliberate double entendre, then Keith Ewan should get into acting because it is so natural. And I didn't hear a reaction, though. Some people later said they thought they heard Julian Ryder with a stifled giggle.
Yeah, I found a clip of it today, and it did seem like someone was giggling a bit, but who knows?
Yeah, it might have been one of those dares. I mean, I remember once they match of the day, no one found out about it for ages, but Alan Shearer and the Newcastle team had a bet how many times they could get ABBA songs into the post-match interview. and Alan Shearer's going, well, you know what I mean, like, you know, it's winner takes it all, and you know, knowing me, and well, knowing you. And he managed to get like five in and no one noticed till the story broke. But anyway, there you go, well done Keith Ewan. Brad's got a hard on. And someone, I don't think it was Miss Beth Andrews, friend of the show and regular contributor on Twitter, but it was one of the girls went, right, I've just come on Twitter and all I can read about is Bradley's got an erection. What's going on? Everyone's talking about Bradley's cock. And no, they're not. They're talking about his tyres. But there you go. Anyway, I'm sure Brad won't mind.
But yeah, qualifying was pretty much the Marc Marquez show again.
Yeah. Yeah,
he was the only rider to go into the 137s, and for most of the weekend, he was a second clear of everyone, like he had been in Austin.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. Not even Mick Doohan was this far ahead once all the 500 greats had retired.
Álvaro Bautista in 10th was just, by 0.004 of a second, was just outside a second from Jorge Lorenzo. So that's from 2nd to 10th, virtually inside a second. Whereas Marquez was 0.8 of a second clear of Lorenzo.
Yeah, like it's insane. The thing is, he obviously, since it's a new track, it was his lap record to break because he'd set the fastest time in free practice three. But on his first flying lap of qualifying, he was already quicker than he'd been all weekend. That's insane.
Yeah. And did you notice, What do we see? Every single session, or certainly every qualifying, Lorenzo is there, champing at the bit, waiting for the green light to come on to leave pit lane. He wasn't.
No. He was waiting.
He let some other people go out first.
But you know who else waited? Marquez.
Yes.
I think Marquez is trying to get in Lorenzo's head. I think he's trying really hard.
We had this discussion by email. Kevin Schwantz had said in an interview, I think about a week, 10 days ago, that Marquez has rattled Lorenzo. He said that whole thing about launching off the line too early, it's because he's rattled. I think I agree with him. I think Lorenzo is rattled. But I don't think Marquez is trying. And I think that's what's rattled Lorenzo. Rossi, the one thing that I took some gleeful delight. We all saw Rossi psychologically destroyed Max Biaggi, Sete Gibernau, to a degree Marco Melandri. you know, he would turn on people who'd previously been friends with him when
definitely
he became
Chibanow
a threat.
He destroyed.
And I mean, he destroyed Chibanow.
Yeah, he said, you'll never win a race again. He never won a race again. Like that. No. Yeah.
But Stoner and Lorenzo, it got to Stoner, he responded, but it didn't make him any slower.
No. He cut, yeah, Lorenzo, Stoner channeled it into anger and went faster.
Lorenzo just bounced off him. If any of it stuck, he never let it show. But Rossi quite clearly was trying to one him. All the little things that we've all seen, we've all observed.
He went to press conferences. Well,
press conference. Lorenzo's talking, lean across his back, have a chat with someone else. Really rude. But, you know, to unsettle them. The way he deliberately missed it. Jorge. His name's not Jorge, you know. Valentino. It's clever, but I think what Rossi found frustrating is it didn't work on Lorenzo and Stoner. I'm wondering now, though, if the reason it didn't work on Lorenzo is he could see that Rossi was trying to unsettle him, and that's a little bit of an ego boost.
Well, I think that's the thing, is that Lorenzo had been in that paddock growing up and seeing Rossi play those mind games with people. Mm. So once he did get to MotoGP, he knew, okay, this guy's going to try and, like, fuck with my head. I need to ignore it, and I know I can be faster than him.
And we all thought, Lorenzo, I didn't expect to like him. I didn't like him when he was 250 champion. I thought he was very arrogant and cocky and everything had to be in his favour. Then he came up and he was so humble and he was so quick, I thought.
Well, after he'd broken both his ankles.
Well, no, he was quick before that. Remember, three races.
He wasn't humble before that, though.
Yeah, he was.
Really? I seem to
remember Qatar. He got pole position. He looked genuinely surprised and delighted. And he was like, oh, this is amazing. I'm racing with, you know, the guys I've been hero worshipping for all these years, blah, blah. He was really, really. And I remember just going, wow. Oh, before China. And then he won his third race with a brilliant unexpected pass on Rossi over the hill at Estoril. You know, he first few propositions, really humble. Then he starts beating himself up and you think, wow, this kid's got something. I think the thing with Marquez isn't trying to do anything.
He's just going fast.
If it's planned, he's gone a level beyond clever from where Rossi's been in the past. But he's not trying to wind anyone up. He's polite about everyone. He's quite complimentary about everyone. He doesn't whinge. He's always got a smile on his face. If he bins it, he just goes, oh well, that was going to happen sooner or later. He just gets on with it. And I think Lorenzo hates being ignored a lot more than he hates someone trying to wind him up. I think that's what it is. He's just, I'm not even worthy his attention.
Yeah, I think Jorge is a bit more mentally solid now after his result in Argentina, but definitely at Austin, I think that was the case.
And he's really been shouting, saying that this is the sweetest third place I've ever got.
Yeah, he said that in the post-race press conference.
Yeah, interesting. Did you read Ross's comments? Bradle cost me a podium.
Yeah, I did, but I don't know.
He was catching Lorenzo, but
even before and after Bradle, he ran wide a couple of times on his own.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking, well, Bradle might have cost you, but you cost yourself more places and time by running wide all the time.
Yeah, like there are at least three times when he ran wide.
Interesting lap chart. Lorenzo took off like a scalded cat. He's so good at starting now. Got the whole shot. Rossi followed him round, but ran wide and was back in fourth place by the end of the second lap. And we lost. Who did we lose on the first lap? Oh, Bautista and Petrucci.
Bautista was
at the first corner.
Bautista apparently came back to the pits in tears.
Yes.
Which is understandable when it's three races, you're on probably the, you know, the tied for third best bike on the grid, probably behind the two factory Yamahas and two factory Hondas, and you've scored no points.
Yes, he does not appear on the MotoGP title standings at the moment. Well, I presume that one of them had taken the other down because they went down at the same corner, although a little bit apart. But no, Alvaro and Danilo Petrucci both had completely independent crashes, just washed out.
Yeah, just lost the front.
Really strange. And then we had this real strange surprise of seeing, well, people were like, well, hang on, who's that in second? And it was Andrea Iannone. He had a bullet start, and by the end of lap three, during the third lap, he came up into second place, and he made it stick for a bit, and then Marquez came past everyone. Because he'd been down at one stage of the first lap. I think he was down in eighth or ninth.
Yeah, him and Danny both had really bad starts and then got shuffled back in the first corner.
But wasn't it crazy? It was like a bloody Moto3 race, the first few corners.
Yeah, it was real good.
When was the last time you saw six MotoGP bikes trying to go around the same corner at the same time on the same bit of tarmac? It was bonkers. Not long after that, we saw Aleix Espargaró chuck it at the scenery, and Keith Ewan very excited went, Danny Pedrosa's down, Danny Pedrosa's down. And Julian said, I think you were fooled by the orange. It was Aleix Espargaró. And then, of course, we saw it was. And there was a heartfelt apology from Keith Ewan to all the viewers. But yeah, and then Aleix Espargaró worked his way back. Now, I don't know about you, but I found this an absolutely engrossing, brilliant race to watch. And then I look and go, hang on a sec. For the last nine laps, there were no changes from end of lap to end of lap in the top seven places. It actually became quite processional. And
well, it was kind of like this time trial of just seeing Ken Pedrosa catch Lorenzo, because that was kind of, thing.
Danny Pedrosa went past Lorenzo and held up for the last couple of laps, and he went past and quite clearly Lorenzo just couldn't go with him.
Yeah, Lorenzo in the post-race press conference said, you know, he could have tried to push and maybe kept up with him, but he thought it was better to secure third and get some more points, which I think was very smart.
After the start of the season he's had, you've got to understand that. What I just find a bit disappointing, and it's been a common theme for me, certainly, and I know for a lot of other people over the last few years, Danny, he was only 1.8 seconds behind Mark, but there didn't even appear to be an effort made to catch him. Now, no doubt, Danny would say, well, my tyres were destroyed. It was all I could do just to stay upright and blah, blah, blah. But I can't see his contract being replaced, being renewed at HRC, because he just... Unless they do what Yamaha did for all those years with Rossi and Colin Edwards. You're a number two rider. We don't expect you to win. You're a development rider, and
just
you
need
are
to get
to get team points and
get fourth
points.
The occasional podium, maybe a win.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they'll go there.
But yeah, I mean, he's obviously a favoured son of Repsol, so that helps. But yeah, if I were Honda, I'd maybe be looking at someone like Vinales and saying, look, this kid's going to be the one until one or two of those Moto3 guys come up who's going to challenge Marquez. Let's get the guy who's going to challenge our best guy, put them on the same team, we win no matter what.
It's funny, in Moto2, I think Tito Rabat is nailed on for a good, what we used to call a satellite, you know, one of the better
Tech 3, LCR.
Factory. Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
I think Maverick Vinales is doing wonders in Moto2. I'm looking forward to seeing how he copes with this season. The other one I just still have a feeling about, and I've said this about Sandro Cortese, who I'm not sure I still have that feeling about, is Luis Salom.
Salom can be quick, but you saw in Austin, Salom has a really bad temper. Like, he threw his bike down in Austin. I'm not the biggest Luis Salom fan. I think he's a bit of a hothead, but he is quick, and I can obviously see.
2 years ago, I'd have totally agreed with you. He's win it or bin it. He's a bit of a crash fest, looking for somewhere to happen. Then last season, I had him nailed on as favourite to win,
that's Akiyayo's influence. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Same as he did with Sandro Cortese.
He's done with Maverick Vinales this year. Akiyayo is now Vinales' manager.
Whoever it was, and I was corrected by one of our listeners, and I know now it wasn't Kenny Roberts, but someone said, I can stop a fast crasher crashing, but I can't make a slow rider fast. And that's exactly what Akiyayo did with them. And he just made them consistent. Yeah, it'll be interesting. But anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Go on, hit us with the Dr. Martin Rains via BT Sport Uber stat.
Oh, yeah. So the last time that a rider won the first three races of the year from pole position was a certain Agostini back in 1971. And the competition in 1971 was obviously a lot different to where it is now, where it was a lot more out of the van racing and a lot less factory bikes.
And let's not forget it. Giacomo Agostini had that Envy Agusta, and he kind of he had, if you like, the RCV, you know, 214, and everyone else was on...
The customer Honda.
Yeah. It was very much that he had the best bike. That is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, Marquez wasn't even a thought in his father's head when Agostini won that many races. Like, that's insane.
No. In fact, Marc Marquez's dad may well have been a kid himself. Well, he would have been a kid himself. Jeez. In fact, Marc Marquez's dad might have been a twinkle in his dad's. I mean, that is incredible. It really is. 43 years. Another point, actually, about Jerez and thinking about can Marquez maintain this, is remember last year, Danny Pedrosa won.
Danny Pedrosa likes Jerez.
Yeah. Yeah, he does well there. But Nicky Hayden, in an article, again, on Bikesport News, he made an interesting point. Because you can't use all the power of MotoGP bike in most of the Jerez track, he said this might be a bit of an equaliser and we might see the pack a bit more closed up, which could help everybody, because it's not the sort of circuit where generally you get a complete runaway. But we'll see. We'll see. We've mentioned about Álvaro Bautista yet to score a point, and Fausto Grassini
not so happy.
Impressed. Bradley, interesting. It was a really good little chat that Neil Hodgson had with Bradley Smith after the race. Was it after race? I think it was. Where he said to him, you know, Brad, again, you seem to be struggling at the start.
A lot like Cal.
Yeah, just like Cal and Rossi did last year. With a full tank, they can't turn the bloody bike. Then the bike would come back to them. And Bradley, I was so chuffed for Neil Hodgson. He's really, really good on that program.
Not afraid to get punched. Excellent.
Not afraid to get punched or to risk getting punched. Although he's not a small lad himself, and I'm sure he's got a reciprocal temper when it's required.
Yeah.
But he was quite happy to play the punter who doesn't know. And Bradley said, what is he got to work on? And Bradley said, well, we need to get the balance right. And Neil said, but what do you mean by balance? And you could see Bradley look at him with a smile going, you know exactly what I mean by balance. Ah, right, this is for the benefit of your viewers.
That's definitely something that BT Sport does. They definitely take it back to basics.
They've hit the middle ground where there's enough technical geek stuff for people like you and me, but there's also enough explanatory stuff, you know, explaining the basics of you know,
chatter.
What balance is, or chatter, or chunking on a tyre. For the casual viewer, because let's face it, they don't have a choice now of Eurosport and BBC. You've just got BT Sport. And I thought it was really good. And Bradley's saying the balance between you put all the weight on the front and, you know, and you're struggling for acceleration and everything, but when you're coming into the corners, you can push hard. You put too much at the rear and it gives you better straight line stability, but at the corners, the front's all wishy-washy and they're trying to get that sorted out. I'm sure they'll manage it, but you're thinking, Jesus, this has been a problem on the M1. For everyone except Lorenzo for 2 years.
Well, even Lorenzo now is saying that the Honda's so good under braking is that that's where, like, they're obviously also very good out of the corners because they have a better engine. Mm. And because of the engine freeze, obviously Yamaha can't really do anything about that. But yeah, Jorge said that that's one area the M1 needs to improve is on that corner entry and stability into braking.
Yeah, I mean, going round the corner, again, it's still a great bike and he can make it work really well doing that. But that's where they used to make up, wasn't it? The Yamahas would overtake them going into the corner. The Hondas would come past them coming out. I remember Qatar last year, and they were saying the nightmare that Cal had because he got stuck behind two of the Hondas was where he was fast was going around the apex of the corner, but he couldn't go fast because there was a bloody Honda in the way.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when you get out to the straight, the Hondas pull away from him, and he catches them up at the next corner, and on the apex, there's a bloody Honda in the way. So it's a real problem. I don't know. Don't know how much Yamaha needs an evolution or a revolution.
Yeah, and obviously it's really hard with the engine freeze where you can't tweak that. So it's not as bad as Moto 2, but it is a lot now down to chassis work.
Yeah, exactly. There's chassis.
Yeah, chassis. With Z, like it's with two Zs or chassis.
Or the Americans chassis.
Yep.
With a hard ch. Yes. Look, you're all colonials. It's our language. Please use it properly or give it back. Standings. Marc Marquez, 3 races, 75 points.
It's like he's playing a video game. Like, it's literally like he's playing the MotoGP video game.
Someone tweeted, it was brilliant. They said, someone said, how on earth do you slow down Marquez? And they said, well, it's like he's playing MotoGP on the Xbox, and he needs to turn everyone else's levels from easy to hard.
Yeah, like he does one lap and he's already a second quicker. Like, yeah. I can do that, but as long as I'm sat in this chair and with an Xbox controller in my hand.
Yeah. Yeah, that was sofa racer, you know, never knowingly beaten by any other sofa. In fact, where's he gone this year on Twitter? I've not seen Soph Racer much.
He's been a bit quiet.
Yeah. Soph Racer, come back to us. Because we don't have Twitch GP either.
No, they died a long, long time ago.
Yeah, unfortunately. I think they took maternity leave.
Yes, that goes with a rumour that I'd heard as to who they were.
Yes. Nice said. So Mark Marquez on 75 points, Danny Pedrosa on 56, Valentino Rossi third on 41, Andrea Dovizioso fourth on the Ducati in 34, but check this out. In fifth place, after three races, Andrea Iannone on a satellite Ducati, 25 points. Good lad.
Yeah, not too shabby.
Stefan Bradl, 24. I think Stefan needs to step up. Unless LCR go to two bikes next year, I think he could be in trouble.
Well, it was mostly Lucio Ceccanello that kept Bradl on that bike this year. Honda were kind of happy for him to step aside.
So yeah.
It will be interesting to see what happens next year.
Jorge Lorenzo, 22 points.
Recovering slowly.
In seventh. Yeah. Alex Espargaro. Now, again, this takes us back to our early thing. Don't start well and end slowly. And Alex is starting every weekend really well in the free practices. And doing very well in QP, and then, just chucking it. Or I mean, he recovered very well, and he made a great effort to get back into the points this weekend. But it might have been better to have stayed on it in the first place. Bradley Smith in ninth on 20 points, and it's like, eh? I thought Brad was doing much better than that. But, of course, he's had his off moments. But, importantly for Brad, he's still 2 points ahead of Paul Espargaro in 10th, Nicky Hayden 11th, Hiroshi Ayama 12th, Scott Redding 13th, Johnny Hernandez, crazy sideways Colombian, 14th, Cal 15th on 10 points. Obviously, he's missed the last couple of races. He crashed out one and he's missed this one. And doesn't look like we're going to see him back for Jerez, which is really disappointing.
Curse of the Ducati.
Yeah. Then we've got Carol Abraham, Colin Edwards, Danilo Petrucci, Hector Barbera and Brock Parks. Barbera and Parks on a single point. And, of course, notable in their absence is Alvaro Bautista.
Yep. 0 points for three races.
If he's not careful, Randy DiPugno is going to end up with more points than him. And Randy's only, I think, planning to run the Suzuki at three or four races.
Yeah, something like that.
And is Jerez the first? I can't remember if they're running this weekend.
I don't think it's this weekend.
No, I don't think it is, no. Last year's result, Jerez, was Pedrosa, Lorenzo, Marquez, Rossi. Kind of familiar. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to Jerez. I think that'll definitely be a chance to see, because, Jerez kind of like the classic tracks, the European season, as they say. And I think that'll really see Pedrosa versus Marquez. I think
nearly always get a good race at Jerez.
Yeah, I mean, it'll rain and Rossi will take out Stoner or...
And there's that last corner, which is just crazy. It must be... Going into that in first place, hearing someone close behind you, you must just be waiting for the T-bone. It's just horrible.
Moto3 would be good.
I hate the track on the PlayStation. I cannot. Honestly, Jerez is basically my tour through the gravel traps of that part of Spain. I just can't work it out. Losail, Qatar. I'm really looking forward to doing a track day when I go out there, because I can absolutely nail Losail. Go to Jerez and it's just. You can be able to tell by the sequence that's my first and second races that I'm still on, like, maybe GP 12, I think, or 11. In fact, it might even be 08, I'm not sure.
Oh, they're all pretty much the same.
Well, each year they get more expensive, and when you read the reviews, everyone says they're even worse than they were and unplayable than the year before. So
yeah,
I kind
of. A bit shit. But yeah. It's kind of one of those things of I don't have anything else to do, so.
Yes. Right. We need to get you out of here fairly quickly, but
we have time to cover superbikes. Yeah. I watched it briefly.
I'd seen little bits of it. World Superbike results, race one, Assen. It was another unfortunate weekend for World Superbikes in terms of seeing completed races, particularly for Fabian Foray, who crashed on the sighting lap. I was in Valencia the year Stoner did it, and it was like, ouch. That is embarrassing.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, warm-up lap crashes, not too good. But, he crashed, and then Jeff May's Buell EBR exploded and dropped oil everywhere. And so then both him and Yates then didn't race in race two because their engines were blown up and they didn't want to blow up any more engines. and the Buell's struggling for top speed, so they're clearly having to hot up those engines a bit too much, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there was something like five laps to go, wasn't it, in race one? So Sylvain Guintoli got the race win. Tom Sykes was second, only a second behind. Johnny Ray, Loris Baz was fourth, Tony Elias fifth, Marco Melandri sixth, Chas Davis.
Melandri's kind of my, this season in Superbikes, I thought Melandri would be on it, you know? He's on the Aprilia. The Aprilia's an excellent bike. Melandri's an excellent rider. But so far, he's done pretty much nothing.
Yeah.
I just don't understand.
He's come to the RSV4 and is not getting on with it. Eugene Laverty had a terrible weekend on the GSXR Thau, the Suzuki, and DNF'd in race one. I'm not quite sure if he crashed or he had a...
I think it was a crash. I'm not sure, though. I didn't watch all of race one. I only caught the last, like, five laps.
Yeah, and of course, Ed Badavini and Christian Iden didn't start on the Bimetas.
Well, no, they did start, but the thing with the bimotor is that since the bike isn't homologated, they get excluded from the results.
Oh, of course, that's
so
right.
So even
yes.
if they finish in 13th and 14th and pick up 3 and 4 points respectively, they get knocked down, which seems like one of the stupidest things to ever do.
Yeah, why let them? Because they're still going to be dicing with people. And
yeah, they could potentially take someone out, and then they... Oh, yeah. Whole thing's silly. But anyway...
Not doing it in chronological, but in series sequence. World Superbike Race 2 was very wet. They were just about to start, and it started to pour, so they delayed the start. Then they started, it was almost immediately red flagged because it was just too dangerous. And then they restarted later on a 10-lap sprint, and Johnny Ray came in with the win. Alex Lowes was second. Davide Giuliano was third. Tom Sykes fourth. Leon Haslam fifth. Marco Melandri sixth. Again, kind of. Yes. Loris Baz, who's been brilliant in the wet before, could only manage
he started
seventh.
From pole. And
that was his first pole position this weekend, wasn't it? Chas Davis was eighth on the Ducati Panigale. Sylvain Guintoli was ninth, and Nicola Canepa was tenth. With K-Boss, great name.
Dutch wildcard.
Yeah, 11th. so on and so forth. And again, Eugene Laverty failed to finish.
He had
terrible
a big crash.
Weekend. Yeah, not nice. So the standings so far after what's that? Three rounds. Tom Sykes is on 108. Sylvain Guintoli, 96. So, hey, same as last year. What's not the same as last year? Is Loris Baz in third place, 93. I think that kid's got something special.
Yeah, definitely.
He's a big lad, though, isn't he? He's
over 6 foot.
Yeah. So whether he could make the step to MotoGP or not, I'm not sure.
But he's still very young, so, you know, he has a lot of time.
He's 21, I think. Yeah.
He's 21 and already doing those sort of results. That's very good.
Mm. Johnny Ray is on 89, just behind him. Then
that's impressive on that Honda.
Yes, yes.
Because that Honda is a piece of shit.
Yeah. It looks like you're racing two different glasses. Marco Melandri fifth, Davide Giuliano sixth, Chas Davis seventh, Eugene Laverty eighth. They're on like 69, 59, 47, 46 points respectively. Leon Haslam, I don't know. I'd like to see Leon back at the front of races. So maybe looking at returning to BSB, maybe. I'm not sure.
I think he had an offer this year to go back to Honda and BSB.
But he's such he's a great rider, but he's such a great guy. He just comes across, he's measured, he's just like his dad. You know, there's a bit of cheek and naughtiness about him, but he's solid, he's brave as a bloody book. I just look back at that year when he was on the, was it the Alstaris Suzuki?
Yeah, when he challenged Biaggi for the title.
Yeah, and they just didn't quite give him any updates. They didn't give him the funding and the backing. And you think, you prats. Because if you had, you could have had a bloody world title. But, hey. World Super Sport, by all accounts, was really entertaining.
Yeah, especially if you were Dutch.
Yeah. Because they had their first ever home win in the World Superbike or World Super Sport Series with Michael van der Mark.
Yeah, and it was a really good ride from him. You know, he won by almost 10 seconds.
Jeez, he did, didn't he?
And he was setting fast laps even towards the end.
Fabio Marino, second, and Jules Cluzel, third, on the MV Agusta F3 that Wiggy San keeps posting pictures of and tagging me in on it. And I'm like, that is bike porn. That is just such a gorgeous bike.
The MV is doing very good.
I like Jules Clouzel as well. He's like Johann Zarco with added talent. You know, he can actually go quickly and he's a little bit mad.
He's definitely as much of a hothead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Kevin Coughlan. Kev Coughlan came in fourth on the R6. And Zanetti was fifth. Robbie Rolfo. Isn't it great to see him still out there?
He's like 40 or something now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got to be pushing it. And PJ Jacobson, having stepped up from BSB, he came in ninth, just thinking, looking down at Rasport Willerot, 13th. So he's coming across to Jerez. Keenan Sofwoglu. Now, he retired. Yeah, it was technical, wasn't it? He ran off rather than crash.
Yeah, he ran off, and you could tell that something was wrong with the bike, but then he kept circulating for a couple of laps, and yeah, eventually he did come in, but it was kind of weird, because he did keep circulating for a few laps, which seemed odd, but...
We've got Florian Marino is leading the championship on 49 points, Michael van der Mark second on 45, Kevin Coughlan third on 44, who had been leading games this weekend, George Grizel fourth on 41, so the top four are all within 8 points of each other. De Rosa's fifth on 34, Tamburini sixth on 29, and the name that people might have been waiting for, Keenan Sofwoglu, is seventh on 25, so wow. Robbie Rolfo ninth on 19. Good lad. Not bad at all. Go on.
Yeah, so the other big bit of racing this weekend, there was obviously the Superbike showdown in the US, but we'll wait till Jim's on the show for him to take you through that, because he'll probably have some interviews from there, and he was... I didn't have time to watch it, unfortunately. I also watched a tiny bit of the Boldore this weekend, whenever I had a spare minute. I managed to watch the Le Mans start. Le Mans start, still an excellent way to start a motorcycle race. We should probably start MotoGP like that.
It would be funny.
Yeah, definitely. It's just very entertaining to see all those people just run across and then try and get away on their bikes. And you can get some excellent starts from a Le Mans start. I think someone from like fifth came to first. And
I'd quite like to see Moto2 start like that and just watch Simone Corsi trip everyone as they're running towards the
bikes. Run like an aeroplane with his arms out.
Definitely.
But yeah, the Boldore was streamed live on YouTube through the official FIM channel, which was really good, because obviously with 24-hour racing and things like that, you know, sometimes it's a bit tricky to get coverage because you can't really, like, put Motors TV on it because it's a 24-hour race. So that was good. And it was also commentated, but in French, so...
Is the Yamaha racing team, is that Carlos Checa or Davide Checa?
Davide,
right. And Fabien Ferré? No, it can't have been. He was bloody... No, that's Foray, not Ferret.
No, yes. Yeah. Because there's two brothers. There's Fabien and Kenny. And they're both brothers.
But the impressive thing is former Friends actor Matt LeBlanc was part of the winning team, I imagine, yeah. Name LeBlanc.
Yeah. So SRC Kawasaki won with Matt LeBlanc, LeGreve, Salchard. And then Yamaha Racing GMT 94 won with...
Five laps. Now, yeah, but how many... 743 laps is it they did?
Yeah, and there were a lot of... It was pissing with rain at the Boldore. So within the first, like, five laps, everyone crashed. Guy Martin crashed on the... what's it called? The R2CL bike. And almost everyone crashed and lots of people remounted. There were lots of safety cars. So five laps is maybe... like the SRC Kawasaki team, I think they crashed on the first lap and then came back to win.
Wow. I'll have to get Ian Wheeler's an expert on this. I'll have to get him to talk me through it. Is it why some teams got three riders and some have four? Is that just up to you or?
I'm not sure.
No, I'm not.
My endurance racing knowledge is wiltering at best.
I was going to say, it's probably better than mine, but
yes,
really not saying anything.
Some other highlights from the race that I didn't really see much of. The Honda team that used to be Honda TT Legends, but is now just run by Honda. They were leading for much of the race, but then they had a mechanical which forced them to pull out. And then the Yacht team, which are obviously usually endurance favourites, they had to retire after 5 hours because Wayne Maxwell, current Australian superbike champion, high-sided and broke his leg.
Ouch.
So they didn't have enough riders to continue. Yes, ouch. And yeah, that was the Boldore. There's probably an archive on it since it was streamed on YouTube. You can probably find it somewhere if you have 24 hours to kill, something to do maybe.
Yeah, watch it all live.
Now to the important bit of the show. or
yes,
important
for
you?
Yes, the Motorcycle News Fantasy Road Race League, the Motorpod hosts mini league within the Motorpod mini league. I've managed to maintain my my position just. I'm eighth in the league with the Helimed Highside as my team, with 261 points. Only 4 points behind and 5 places behind is Harry Lloyd with Necessary Faster. Well done, Harry. 13th with 257 points. We've both moved up. Jules has moved up. He's in 31st place with 235 points. And Dave has moved up. He's
Dave was the real winner.
Yeah, 55th, 5 points, 222. In fact, he's got 55th place in league position. Overall position is 3,222 with 222 points. Jim's the only one of the hosts who moved down. He's down to 79th place with 204 points. Now, what I found interesting is the leader of our mini league is Paul Meadows with his TED 3 team. 279 points. He's moved down, but of course, that's down in the overall league rather than in our mini league. And in second place is Roberto Bobinho, whose team is imaginatively named Roberto Bobinho, just without the space between Roberto and Bobinho. But well done, Roberto. 276, only 3 points behind. So it's all to play for as we move to Jerez. I do like the new format where you can change your team. Don't forget, everybody. I know Jim always hates it when I give these things away, in case anyone knows. You can change your team up to 3 riders, remaining within budget between every single race. So I've just had a little tweak myself, and in tribute to the Belgian lad, Livio Loy has just joined my Moto3 team. Sorry, Alex Masbu, I've dropped you.
It's tough, you know. You have to make some tough choices running.
You do. It's not a popularity contest. I'm not here to make these riders feel good. I mean, I've gone from Marquez to Pedrosa. I had to because he's a bit cheaper. Sorry, Danny. But yeah, I had to make a couple of changes.
Definitely a few sleepless nights for me thinking about
the one I suspect that I'm really going to wince about changing, barring, you know, horrible things like injuries, is the one I really want to keep with his Tito Rabat.
Yeah, he's definitely one that him and Jack Miller are almost pillars of my team at this point in time.
So using the wonderful BikeSportNews.com Race Canada, what we got coming up this weekend, or what we got coming up, MotoGP Jerez this weekend. No World Superbike this weekend, but Imola is the weekend after, 9th to 11th of May. BSB this weekend at Alton Park at the recent test. Shaky Moore was fastest again. Teammate Stuart Easton was second, and Chris Walker was third. And so all Kawasaki's. Having said that, Taiko Suzuki, which is John Hopkins and Josh Waters, Milwaukee Yamaha, of course, with Josh Brooks. And I'm trying to think who the other one Milwaukee Yamaha rider is. Tommy Bridwell, of course, and Bill Bass, BMW, Richie Chianari. None of those teams attended that test. So that's not necessarily that indicative. Hopper, don't forget, last time he was at Alton, won both races, first time there. AMA or Superbike Shootout, there's nothing till Road America on the 1st of June. And in real roads, we have the Northwest 200 on the 17th of May. So that's still a couple of weeks away. If anybody would like to join the Fantasy League, go to MotorcycleNews.com/FRR for Fantasy Road Race. Register a team. If you do, you're going to start with a disadvantage because you missed some already races. But if you've already got a team and you'd like to join our league, 14963 is the PIN. That's 14963. Enter that PIN. Apply to join. If you're not doing very well, Jim will let you in. If you are doing very well, he might say, get scuffed. And of course, as ever, it's an expensive business doing this. We give our time willingly and freely, but there are bandwidth costs and attendance costs at races. I think we've got Dave Neal attending Alton Park this weekend.
Yes, Dave will be at Alton.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Wearing several hats, a Motorpod hat, his Straw Bales hat, and, you know, he, as I think we've all realised, Dave has got some very, very good access. So,
there'll be some good interviews.
Yeah, no, definitely. Do we have anything else for the good and benefit of
nope.
the podcast?
That's it.
I think that's it. So the theme, it is the Max Biaggi tribute. Aye, you fucking bastards. You fucking codsuckers. Race. Jerez should be great. Looking forward to it this weekend. Normal time to watch. Actually, the when they go west to America and South America, it's actually pretty damn good because we get to watch it, you know, in a nice, comfortable evening environment.
Mm. Yeah. Don't have to wake up at Sparrow's Fart.
No.
Good no. stuff.
Super. Okie doke.
Catch everyone next week.
Thanks very much, guys. Good night.
Bye.